Hello, survivors of the storm. Okay. Pearl Vision versus Dr. Victor Rahm, 072681. And it's Mr. Noland. Hello.
Good morning, Justices. John Noland for the defendants.
You know what? We are just judges. In the state system, they're justices. But in our system, we're just judges.
You know, you get justice nevertheless.
I actually asked the clerk of the court if the proper title is justices. He said yes.
Oh, dear.
So I tried to do some homework.
We're going to have to give you extra time to run across and...
Yeah, you square him away on the way out.
Absolutely, Judge. I'll square him away.
It's very sweet. Don't worry about it. But we really are just lovely judges. Okay.
I wish I had learned a lesson of humility at a younger age like that.
I don't know. Okay. You can start your argument.
Judges, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm John Noland for the defendants. And this is involving a contempt of court fine in the district court, a civil contempt of court fine. And we're arguing that primarily amount of the contempt fine of $321,000 was arbitrary based on U.S. Supreme Court law and Seventh Circuit law when such a civil compensatory fine for contempt of court is to be based to compensate a party. It must be based on evidence. And the U.S. Supreme Court in the United Mine Workers case said the fine must be based on evidence of actual losses.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Noland. In Dr. Rahm's affidavit, he stated that he turned over all of the paper records to Pearl, and that Pearl's representative admitted this in sworn testimony. Where in the record will we find support for that contention? Because that would be helpful.
It's my understanding, because I was not involved in the proceedings below until the bankruptcy was filed, but that the reference in Dr. Rahm's affidavit of that confirmation was in discussions with the Pearl Vision agents. I can't recall a reference to sworn testimony.
Okay.
And in this particular case, it is our position there is no evidence presented to base such an exorbitant fine of $321,000 that the imposition of a $1,000 a day fine is arbitrary, because where is the evidence to base such a high amount, an excessive amount? Where is the evidence of damages?
Well, now, is it true that he has yet to produce many of the documents and items that he was ordered to produce?
Judge Rovner, because in that same affidavit, attached in the response, docket number 79, to Judge Kokora's order of September 12, 2005, he states, I believe it's paragraph 12 of that affidavit, that he turned over 12 boxes of hard copies of the patient data that represented 12 years of records, and that the hard copies in the 12 boxes representing the, rather the 12 years, excuse me, represented substantially the same information that was on the computers, and the confusion with the electronic data of the patient records, I think, requires an examination or inquiry into some of the testimony by an expert of Pearl Vision, and it is recited in the reply brief that he was not able to access, to look into a fourth computer, and therefore there is an ambiguity because the expert, the computer expert, could not access the fourth computer, whether the allegation of missing electronic records could have been met with the access into that fourth computer. Nevertheless, such an examination would be substantially mooted by Dr. Rahm's affidavit saying that the 12 years of patient records in the hard copies were substantially the same as those electronic records.
Now, if $1,000 a day is not the right figure, what would be the right figure, or should there be no figure?
Judge Rovner, it's our position that the figure must be based on evidence of losses, as the U.S. Supreme Court in the United Mine Workers case, as the Seventh Circuit opinion in the Nordstrom case, which the Supreme Court cited in the United Mine Workers case. There are other Seventh Circuit cases, the City of Gary case, in which the appellate court examined the district court's determination of the damages, in which there were dollar figures, estimates of losses, subtraction of expenses. There was nothing even akin to such an examination.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Wall, hello.
Good morning, Your Honors. I think that's safe enough, isn't it? Let me answer your Judge Rovner, your questions first. You asked about the complete, whether or not the complete paper records were turned over. I can't cite you the page, but in the transcript of the evidentiary hearing that occurred on October 22, 2004, the representative from Pearl Vision, Michael Mazierek, testified that he did receive paper records from Dr. Rahm. But also at that hearing, Dr. Rahm had testified that he admitted that he had patient records on his computers. So what Mr. Mazierek said, I could never tell you whether or not I have received a complete set because I don't know what was on the computers. So that we were never able to tell if we had a complete set. We do know that the three computers that he did, he turned over four computers. Three of them, as the expert testified, when they were turned on and hooked up to a monitor, what they said they were trying to do was try to find the server, because these were simply workstations such as we would have at our own desk, but they have to trace the information and data to a server, and we were never given any server. The fourth computer, which the expert testified again on October 22, 2004, what he said is that this was such an old computer he couldn't even find a monitor that would hook up to the computer so he could see if anything was on there. Also, if, as they suggest now, belatedly, that there was something on that fourth computer, some records on that fourth computer, certainly they should have at the time in the trial court, in all those proceedings, said, well, we'll open it up, we'll show you what's on here, here's the records you've been looking for, I'm being fined $1,000 a day for this, so I want to stop that, I'm going to tell you what's on here.
So,
that never happened.
So Pearl Vision has these paper copies, and it is what you're now saying, that the documents or property that remains to be produced are all on that fourth
No, no, not at all.
Computer?
We don't even think there's anything on the fourth computer. As the expert said, he said that was so old,
so
he couldn't even get it to operate. So we doubt that that was really being used in the store.
What's missing? He claims he supplemented the record with all the documents that you complained were missing.
What happened was that he, piece by piece, gave us some paper records. We don't know whether or not he gave us the complete set of paper records. But more important, he admitted that there were records on the computers, and that's what he did not turn over to us.
Is
the computers.
What's missing?
I'm sorry?
The server?
Yes, we didn't receive a server, and apparently that's where the data was.
Is there such a thing? Has he said there is such? And I don't know enough about it to even say where to look. But is there one?
Right, and I'm closer to your generation, so I don't understand all these things either, but what he said is, I put this information, there was data on the computers. Now, he may have been speaking generically that it was on a workstation or a server, but what the expert said is that the computers that he received, that we received, had no patient data on them. That what apparently, if any data was there, it was on a server, and we got no server. All we received was a personal PC.
Where in the record did the district court make the factual findings that would support a $1,000 a day contempt award? I mean, that's, wow, a lot of money.
It is, Your Honor. But if you look at the history of what happened here, Dr. Rahm was ordered in early September to give us the records. There was an injunction entered. He did not comply. So we went in on a rule to show cause, and that was issued. He did not comply with the rule to show cause. So we went in on a second rule to show cause. Judge Lefko at that time said, if you don't comply, then the fine will be $1,000 a day. So she issued the second rule to show cause. He still didn't comply, so we went on a third rule to show cause, and that was issued, and he still would not comply. We had two evidentiary hearings. One, the dates were, and they're in the record. The first one was on October 14th of 2004, and the second one was on October 22nd of 2004. Dr. Rahm testified at both of those hearings, and he said, yes, there was data on the computers, but it wasn't turned over to us. So the fine kept running because he simply refused to comply with the judge's orders.
Now you've got, I mean, Pearl Vision has the stores, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We do have the stores, but there was equipment that he never turned over to us. He took everything out of the stores, and we did not get it all back.
Bottom line, what's the amount of money?
Well,
I mean, is that in the record?
There was a judgment entered on the merits for $326,000, and that was wiped out because he filed bankruptcy.
Right.
But that was absolutely found to be due to us on the merits. So this number of $321,000 is obviously very close.
So, okay, I see.
Are these back in business now, or?
I think they were closing one and then reopening the other three.
So but obviously they've lost the customer list, the patient records, and all that.
Right.
And a lot of, I guess, goodwill and other things that would go with the business. You start over, basically.
Even the customer's deposits were missing. We couldn't refund anything to anybody. We couldn't do their prescriptions because it was all gone other than what we might be able to find in the paper records.
So there are liabilities that are sticking out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we had those problems as the case went along.
Of course, I guess that's all part of the judgment that's been wiped out, huh?
That's what happened, right. Because as soon as we got the judgment, then he filed for bankruptcy. But, of course, the bankruptcy judge has said that this may be reopened. It can be reopened because the contempt order is a willful violation of the court's orders and repeated orders. Judge Lefko gave him chance after chance after chance to comply. Even Judge Kouros did a year later, said, come in now and turn over those records or give us your financial information. And he didn't either. Then Judge Lefko said, give me your financial information. He didn't do that either. So they can hardly complain about the amount of the fine at this late date.
Was Judge Kouros hearing this in Judge Lefko's absence?
Yes, well, she had suffered that tragedy.
Yes.
Right.
see.
So there was this whole series of events in the trial court that were just absolutely frustrating, impossible to deal with. Dr. Rahm simply decided that he was not going to comply with the orders of the court, regardless of what Judge Lefkoe said to him. And this is a fine that was he was given notice of in advance. I'm going to fine you $1,000 a day if you don't comply. It's not something that was applied later on to punish him. It was something that he was warned about. He always had the ability to purge himself of this problem, and he didn't do it.
Forgive me, because I'm not 100% on my game today, but you are saying that there are actual factual findings that would support the $1,000 a day contempt.
Not on a per se basis, Your Honor. The $1,000 a day clearly came from Judge Lefkoe's order. That was a coercive order that said...
Isn't that the purpose of it, is to get compliance?
Absolutely.
I mean, you give a fine that's going to cause a little pain if there's no compliance.
Right. And now we can't say, well, he didn't comply, so now we should take it away from him because we want to be nice. Because otherwise, then you destroy the ability of the courts to enforce their orders. I think it has to be enforced because it's clear. This is a terrible record. Over and over and over, he simply refused to comply with what Judge Lefkoe told him to do. We had two evidentiary hearings on this. This didn't come out just because of argument of counsel. This was something that she went into and heard testimony in.
At some point, he was without counsel, wasn't he?
He was, but that was much, much later. He had appealed the injunction and then didn't prosecute the appeal, so that was dismissed. And then, but at the very end, he did obtain new counsel right before the bankruptcy.
What was the time that expired or passed between the judge's statement that the fine, you will be fined $1,000 a day unless you comply, and the starting of the fines to take place?
The injunction was entered on 9/30/2004, September 30th. The first rule to show cause was on October 6, 2004. The second rule to show cause was entered on October 7, 2004. And then on October 14, 2004, was the first evidentiary hearing. And after that, Judge Lefkoe said, starting today, if you don't comply, then it's going to be $1,000 a day. We then had a second evidentiary hearing on October 22nd, and when he still had not complied by that time, and she said, so I'm going to continue the fine running until you comply.
So actually there wasn't really an appreciable period of time.
No.
It was about 7 days. For, she said the fine will take be $1,000 a day unless you comply.
Right.
And that went into effect when she said it, apparently, from what you just said.
Right.
But then 8 days later, there was another hearing, and there's still no compliance.
Right. But we have to keep in mind that even before she set the fine, she had ordered him by virtue of the original injunction.
I understand that.
Right. So he was out of compliance even then.
When was the bankruptcy filed?
It was filed in September or October of 2005, okay. After Judge...
When was the judgment rendered? The judgment of $307,000?
The judgment on the merits was entered in September of 2005. Right after that, he filed bankruptcy.
Okay.
And then after the bankruptcy proceeding, we went back to the trial court, and the $321,000 fine was entered. That judgment was entered because of the contempt.
Now, was all this motion to produce in preparation for this trial? Or
What started it was that his franchise agreements required him to turn the stores over to us peaceably. He did not do that, so we filed our complaint and our motion for preliminary injunction. The day the preliminary injunction was going to be heard, he came in and he said, never mind, I'll agree, I'll give you everything. And that night, rented a truck and looted the stores while the lawyers were writing up the agreed order.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. Mr. Nolan.
Yeah.
Your Honors, I'd like to...
4 minutes.
I'd like to respond to some of the accusations and unsupported allegations made by plaintiff's counsel, which was consistent with the plaintiff's response brief. There were numerous statements made which are unsupported by citations to the record. The reply brief specified certain of the allegations which are wholly unsupported in the record. Again, I would say that counsel's argument is additionally unsupported by the record.
We don't have a record of this trial that resulted in a $300,000+ judgment, I presume. That's not part of this?
Judge, the way the fine occurred was that the $1,000 a day fine started from October 14, 2004 up to September 1st, 2005.
September 1st. Yeah, well, that's the accumulating time. That's when the bankruptcy's filed, right? Or somewhere around there?
Actually, Judge, the bankruptcy was filed later in October of that year.
All right. The only reason I bring it up is because I assume a lot of stuff came in that's not on the record about looting and various and sundry other things that resulted in a $300,000+ judgment.
Well, Judge...
You weren't involved then.
So no, I came in after the bankruptcy was filed, after the adversary complaint for a determination of non-dischargeability of the contempt fine was filed.
So I have a big gap in here about what's really going on. And we get rumors of things that he wasn't doing a darn thing, but we don't know. And you don't know. You were successful in getting him his discharge and judgment, so...
Well, Judge, the answer to some of those questions, I think, is illuminated by the record which shows in Dr. Rahm's affidavit, in which he states unequivocally, and it is in the appendix to the main brief, starting on page 16, that in paragraph 12 of Dr. Rahm's affidavit, in the appendix to the brief, that he returned... There were 12 years of patient records contained in dozens of boxes, end quote. The plaintiff did not file a counter affidavit. The plaintiff did not file any responsive pleading. I think that speaks volumes as to what is in the record, what is available to determine some of these answers, especially the fine. There is simply no evidence to support actual damages, which the U.S. Supreme Court required in the United Mine Workers case, who cited the Seventh Circuit for the same proposition in the Nordstrom case. And if I could just close with there was a question, Judge Evans, about isn't the $1,000 a day aspect of the fine to produce a coercive effect, and it is true, this fine had a dual nature. The district court said that on the record, that the fine was both to be of a coercive nature and compensatory, but yet to be even of a coercive nature, there must be some reasonable relation to the nature and gravity of the conduct, and I don't think that was proven. Thank you.
Was there ever any objection to the amount of the fine? Did he ever say, "Oh, I don't care. You can order me to do this, but it shouldn't be. It should be $100 a day instead of $1,000."
I do know, Judge, that when Dr. Rahm appeared pro se after the case was reopened, when the bankruptcy injunction was lifted, that the amount was so excessive because he had already been financially ruined by the loss of his stores, causing him to file the bankruptcy and being the sole breadwinner in the family, that he didn't understand how he could pay that fine. And the district court, in the period the case was reopened in 2007, and there are transcripts attached that support these arguments, the district court was concerned, in fact, that fine that Judge Lefkoe had not imposed $321,000 amount. Judge Kokoris had. And when the case was reopened in 2007, Judge Lefkoe was concerned about the amount, that she didn't want that to ruin Dr. Rahm's family's life. It's in the transcripts attached to the main brief.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Wall. The case will be taken under advisement.